This is Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station, part of the Attention Talk Network. Its sister stations include Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station, our subscription-based newsletter, Attention Talk News, your ADHD news source. Each media channel can be accessed at their respective URLs, attentiontalkradio.com, attentiontalkvideo.com, and attentiontalknews.com. Keep up with all the media channels on our Facebook page, found at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Good night, everybody. This is your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper, and this is Attention Talk Radio. Tonight is Wednesday, September the 18th in the year 2013 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our topic tonight, ADHD and sales careers, not a one size fits all solution. We're pretty excited about this show. I think that it's very, very insightful. Due to some scheduling, we did actually pre-record this thing in its entirety. We're going to let that run in a second. Before we do, just a few announcements. It is almost the eve of, of the regional CHAD conference in Dallas, Texas. That's this weekend, this Saturday, if you will, September the 21st. I don't think it's too late to sign up. Just go to chadd.org to learn more. And, of course, the CHAD's national conference is right around the corner, November 7th to the 9th. It's in the Washington, D.C. area this year. I'll be there. I know that's actually I'm getting ready to go online and book my tickets and reserve my hotel room, but that's November 7th through the 9th. Again, for more information on that, go to chadd.org. I think that's all the announcements, other than just a reminder, Attention Talk Radio is a part of the Attention Talk Network, so check us out at Attention Talk News and Attention Talk Video. As I mentioned tonight, tonight's show has been pre-recorded, so we're just going to start to play it in its entirety. We hope that you enjoy it. I think it's very valuable. We're covering ADHD, we're talking about sales, and we're also talking about labels and the confusion and the need to understand the details, because that's where the devil is. And not all sales jobs are for those with ADHD, and just because you have ADHD in a sales job doesn't mean it's not right for you. You just might be in the wrong sales-type job. So with that, we hope you enjoy.
Tonight, our topic is ADHD and sales careers, not a one-size-fits-all solution. And with us in our virtual studio is Steve Collender, an ADHD sales coach. Steve is... I lost my notes for a second. He specializes in coaching those with ADHD in sales. He also shares resources and ideas to help salespeople whose ADD keeps them from reaching their fullest potential. You can get more information on him at addsalescoach.com. Now, one thing that's important, I think that's key about him, is Steve is also the president of Effective Learning for Growth, with over 30 years of business experience in creating, delivering, messaging, learning, as well as advising clients on a broad way of industries. He got his BA at Davidson College in Spanish, but here's the key. He got his MS and doctorates in learning at Virginia Polytechnic Institute. And here's the reason that that's a big deal to me, is you've got a guy who understands sales, who understands ADHD as a coach, but he's an educator, so he... And I've known Steve a little bit. He's very good at articulating some stuff, so that's a really big feather in his cap. And he also still actually teaches some PhD-level courses at Capella University Graduate Business School, and I'm sure I botched that up. My apologies. He's located in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And with that, Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. Very glad to be here.
This show is labeled Attention Talk Radio, and at the top of the show, we always go, we pay attention to attention. And it confuses everybody, because attention to me is as simple as it is complex to understand. And I know that you've listened to some of our shows and gotten a sample of that, but today's show is like the epicenter of what this show is all about, because so often people will look at something and they make some assumptions and they stereotype. And as I said, they don't really pay attention to what's going on. And one of the things that I've learned on the show and interviewing the experts, like, you look at attention deficit disorder, it must be a deficit of attention, and it's not. It's actually a self-regulation. communication issue. And when you understand that, it explains why kids can play computer games for hours on end. Their problem is not paying attention to them. Their problem is stopping. On the other side, they might
exactly
have
right.
difficulty engaging in, like, chores because they don't want to do it. Anyway, I wrote
And yet, while they're doing those chores, if they get in the zone and they get that hyper-focus going, they might do all the dishes in the house.
Touche. So I did an article a couple years ago called Digital Descriptions, and it was kind of funny because my point really was is labels are like it's a picture. I mean, imagine a word is like a dot, and if you just had like the word leader, it'd be like a dot, which would be like, if I said tree, that dot might be green, but that's all you got. It's just got this. You can't even see that it's a tree. And the point really is the more you describe the tree, or the more you describe a leader, the clearer a picture that you have of what you're really talking about, and you actually can find out things were different. And in that article, I talked about a leader. And, you know, is it the first person in line, like the Marine storming a beach? Or is it the charismatic leader that motivates the Marine to storm the beach? Or is it like the president who's accountable to the Marine storming the beach? Or is it like the knowledgeable guy who knows how to get the Marine to the beach alive so he can do that? And as you start to describe that stuff, you get a much clearer picture of it, and you get like this amazing diversity of a leader being the first in line. You say, well, that's not really a leader, but certainly a Marine storming the beach would. But then you go to like the accountability stuff. And so today I really wanted to kind of talk about sales. And you and I, in preparing for this, I think we both had a lot of great ideas. And I just really want to kind of go through and take sales and bust it up and break it down into kind of comparing, contrasting type things and talk about the characteristics of it so that when people are out there and kind of going sales, it's as diverse. You're going to find out it's as diverse can be. So, you game, Steve?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. I'm going to start. I used to be in group insurance sales, and one of the things about that was I had a recurrent sale. In other words, once you sold somebody, every year there was a renewal.
Right.
And you already had a relationship with them. You always went through the sales process last year, but you had developed that relationship. But there's also episodic sales where you sell at one time and you might not ever have a relationship with that person again. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good dichotomy of it between the relationship sale and the transactional sale or the episodic sale. First sales job that I ever had was at Dunhill Personnel. And it might have become a relationship sale eventually, but boy, was it transactional.
Mm-hmm.
It was cold calling about 50 names each morning, and if
mm-hmm.
I only got to 40 of them, the next morning I had 60.
Mm-hmm.
It was essentially recruiting. You know, it's human resource staffing.
Uh-huh.
And we were working both sides of the street, so we were both trying to find employers who needed people and find people who needed employment and put the two together. But that was a very transactional sale. I've done relational sales, and I've done a variety of other kinds. Sometimes there's some that's not quite on that two-way dimension, which is the complexity of the sale.
Mm-hmm.
I also used to sell in the Department of Defense, and there it was selling through proposals. One of the proposals that we did, we actually had we hired out an 18-wheeler to deliver the proposal to the Office of Personnel Management.
Get their attention. Well, I want to back up for a second because I said reoccurring and episodic, but I think you really kind of did a better job putting this under umbrella. There's a relationship sale and transactional sale. And to me, you're the sales expert. I mean, I had a job, but you coach people on this all the time, is that in relationship sales, it's a little bit more touchy-feely. There's a little bit more slow. There's the close is a little bit more subtle because of kind of the ongoing relationship and the rapport that you develop. But a transactional sale to me, and I'm going to an extreme, like if you're selling furniture or a car, they walk out a lot. The chances of them coming back are relatively small. So it's much more in your face, much more put pressure on them, at least from my perspective. And I want you to comment on this a second, but when you talk about the differences between maybe a softer sale and a high-pressure sale, to me that is two different mindsets, two different skill sets, and two levels of acume. Thoughts?
Absolutely agree with you. The difference between a relationship sale and a more high-pressure sale where it's a one-call sale, where
mm-hmm.
at the end of the phone call or at the end of the face-to-face visit, they buy it or they don't. And the likelihood that you'll ever talk to them again if they're not buying it, it is very, very, very slim. So, yeah, it's a very different dynamic, and it requires different skill sets. You know,
and people that might,
go ahead.
People that might be really good at that transactional type sale, they might be kind of just naturally kind of in your face and kind of gruff. They might not necessarily do very well in the relationship sale. And I know this myself. I was much better in the relationship sale, but I can't sell transactionally. It just, I'm just not built. I don't like people putting pressure on me, and I have a real hard time putting pressure on themselves. And I say that because I was on the wholesale side of stuff, and I knew that I never really wanted to go to retail just because it wasn't in my DNA.
Right. Right, I get it. And it is a very different kind of sale. I tend toward working with people who are in the relationship sale much more than the folks who are in the transactional one-call sale. But, you know, either one can be a good fit for a person's personality. I would say that for the folks that are more spontaneous or prone to ad-lib things, make things up, the one-call sale might be a pretty good environment where people have more talent in remembering what was said last time and last year and the year before that and building a relationship over time. Other people will be really much better at that. There's also a difference in, there's also a difference in the amount of pressure. You know, selling insurance, of course there's a lot of pressure, but the pressure is mostly on you rather than mostly on the client, most of the time, I think. Where that, what I mean by that is, if you're continuing the sale, if it's a reoccurring sale, then you need to manage the relationship, become aware of any issues that have come up and how you've handled those issues, and continue and expand the sale. You're going to explore, so here comes the discovery part of it, of the overall process that we talked about last time. You'll need to discover, you know, what their needs are, what needs have changed, what circumstances have changed, and so on. So it requires a certain amount of patience and discipline to let them talk about what they need, to let them talk about what's happened. Where in a more high-pressure transactional sale, you're going in to establish rapport very quickly.
Yep.
You're going in to discover if they have a need right now. And if they have a need right now, then you're going to frame up what you're selling as a one-call close. You're going to set it up for them to make the right decision, which, of course, is to buy. And, you know, you're going to have then the discipline to, again, like we talked about in the last show, to be quiet and let them say yes.
Fascinating. I want everybody to listen to this. We actually were recording this show, and we recorded another show that talked about what would attract the sales position and the reason to attract it, and we haven't figured out the order. So if you're listening to this and you're referring to it, watch, because another one's coming, going to be aired shortly thereafter. So just everybody that's out there. I got another way of looking, another thing that I want to kind of throw out there, and everybody, this builds on each other as it kind of moves on, but Steve, to me, there's a difference between a replacement sale and a create-a-need sale. And a replacement sale, again, because of insurance, is if you've people have car insurance. You're just really replacing something that they already have. But creating a need is, let's say you've got some product that they don't have or they don't know or that's not out there and they didn't even know they needed it. You're having to create that need, whereas before they already know they need it, but you're just trying to replace it. But creating a need sale is very different from a replacement sale, right?
I would agree, yeah. Especially if by replacement you also mean displacement. Like if I have Allstate insurance and you want me to get Nationwide insurance, then what you need to build into the sale is the concept of what are the switching costs, and are the switching costs lower than the benefits that I'll get by switching? And with a new sale or a need sale, I would be buying something that I didn't even know I needed before. But when I hear about it, you can persuade me that, you know, it does meet some need I hadn't recognized could be fulfilled by something that you might offer.
It
involves the need sale involves a lot more imagination, I think, than the replacement sale or displacement sale.
It's funny because to me, the replacement displacement is a little bit more negative. Sometimes you're bad mouthing your competitors, whereas a need sale is you're focused on the positive of how they'll benefit from that need. And I had been in the insurance business for a period of time, and I left, got my MBA, went in the upstart world, and I worked for a CLEC, which is a competing telephone company to what used to be the Ma Bells, like the Verizons and stuff. That's one of the only ones that are left. And at the time, we had a product, and basically, it's oversimplified. It's kind of like a Google Voice number. You'd have a telephone number that you'd point to wherever phone you wanted it. And at the time, it was early on and whatever, and it was this new type of thing. It was really kind of cool. Just have one number for life. It would call you. It'd go find you at your home or your cell phone or your work or whatever. And we had this ability that, you know, you could actually access your voicemail on the web. You could actually do group voice messages and, you know, anyway, all that kind of stuff. And it was funny because I had gone from insurance sales, which was highly regulated, and replacement sales, to this create a need. And you go out there, and it was fascinating because you're talking to people, and you're having to come up with these kind of crazy, like, wow, look at what you can do with this, and almost demonstrate it, because they didn't necessarily know that they needed it. And actually, there's actually a behavioral change that would accompany this a little bit. And I've learned over the years is if you're behavioral change is really difficult because people are accustomed to the inertia of what they do some stuff. But it was interesting to me because my mindset had to change. And I actually found that the creating the need, while I feel like I'm a creative guy sometimes, it was different and more challenging to me than the replacement type sales. And again, focus for me is it's sales, but it's very different. It requires a very different set of traits. Your thoughts, Steve?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. There's creativity in both, but in the displacement or replacement sale, what you need to do is, yes, perhaps badmouth the competition, and it's a more logical sale.
Mm-hmm.
While the new product sale, the create a need sale, is a much more imaginative sale. They have to imagine what it will be like having this wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of my clients sells renewable energies. He sells small wind and solar. And in that case, usually it's a needs sale because what he has to do is he has to get his clients to imagine, you know, this object up there above their farm spinning away and imagine the meter running in reverse and imagine sticking it to the electric company. And there's a lot of things that he can use, but he's not replacing anything. The status quo that he's changing or replacing is every month I pay the utility bill.
Mm-hmm.
And every day, every moment, there's electricity provided. You know, it's all the same all the time. So he has to do a creative sale to get them to imagine just how will this thing look up on their farm, up by their small rural enterprise. So it's a different kind of sale than if he's trying to replace one unit with another unit.
Absolutely. Need to run to a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the different kinds of sales between a tangible product and an intangible product, because it's a very, very different. But before we do, everybody, and by the way, everybody, this builds. So we're going to do layer after layer after layer. When you start kind of doing this stuff, you're going to realize there's a gazillion different type of micro niche sales jobs out there. But if you want to learn more about Steve, go to his website, addsalescoach.com. There you can sign up for his webcast that he does every couple of weeks, and there's a contact button. So if you've got any questions, you can just go there and email him directly. So with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Attendees and exhibitors are invited to participate in CHAD's 2013 Annual International Conference on ADHD that will be held November 7th through the 9th at the Hyatt Regency, Arlington, Virginia. Details about the annual conference are available on our new website at chad.com. Don't miss this chance to become an exhibitor and sponsor at this premier annual event.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're here with Steve Collender having a great conversation. It's really a labels discussion. We're breaking, deconstructing sales positions in a way to see, realize that they're completely different in skill sets. You can be really good at one of these and not another. So if you're out there and you're attracted to a sales position and it's not working, maybe you're casting yourself in the wrong type of sales job. But also, by the same token, there's many people out there that says, you know, those with ADHD are always, sales is where they should go, and that's not necessarily all the case. There's another show that he and I are doing about the attraction to it, and there's some issues in the back that might be more challenging. But with that, before the break, we were talking about the difference between relationship, sales, and transactional. We also talk about replacement and create a need. Let's talk about tangible and intangible products, Steve. Do you want to share your thoughts?
Sure. I think that tangible products are, I would say, usually a lot easier to sell. In my experience, at least, because it's a matter of getting the product in the person's hand.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's a new watch or a boat or whatever, you know, the more they can experience handling the product, touching the product, literally tangible, the better chance you have of making the sale. With an intangible, it's a more complex thing because you have to get them to imagine the benefit without there being all those visual, tactile, auditory hooks that you have with a tangible sale. For instance, selling coaching services is absolutely an intangible sale because what they're getting is not something that comes in a shrink-wrapped box. It's not something that they can pick up, touch, check the weight of. It's a service that is a lot harder to define. So with that, when it's an intangible sale, you usually have to define what the benefit is and try to get them to imagine the benefit, even though it may be a little harder to imagine.
This is really funny. There's some other coaches out there. I've had this conversation at the last four conferences I've been to, Chad, at a ADD Coaches Organization, about selling coaching services. And as I've described, as I get to know the market that I try to promote myself to, which is adults that have been diagnosed with ADHD later in life. It's a very difficult sale, and as I described to other people, an iPad is relatively easy to sell to an ADHDer. It's got the blitz and the glitz and all that kind of stuff, and it's tangible, and they can see it, and it's a lot of fun, and it's relatively simple. When you move to the intangible side, parents are more apt to write a check for their kids for intangible for a couple reasons. One, they love their kids. Number two is sometimes emotionally, they feel so bad that actually, if they're writing the check, it actually makes them feel good. I'm writing this big check, so I care. So they're more apt to go do some of those services. But when it comes to themselves, and I say this because of buyer's remorse, times that they bought intangible type things and it didn't manifest, there's this slow to act. And as I've described, they'll pay about the price of a movie. But anything past that becomes a very difficult sale because it's intangible. And because of buyer's remorse, and there's so much out there that's kind of going on, and I share that because you talk about selling an iPad to somebody with ADHD to an intangible coaching service, and it's a completely different sale, and as I've found out, a very challenging sale. Now that's my experience.
Absolutely, could not agree more. I think that selling coaching services is one of the most intangible.
And difficult for the market that we, as I described, because it's intangible to those with ADD, and it's emotionally a big deal. But because of their impulsive buying history in the past, to me, it's more difficult than even a normal intangible type person, given the nature of it.
Well, yes, and it's also asking people to take a leap into the unknown.
Yep.
and about something that very often is emotionally charged.
Yep.
I mean, folks with ADD, ADHD absolutely have some baggage about it. There's all manner of guilt, shame, anger, frustration, you know, a range of negative emotions about it. And to mark it on the basis that you can make those a little less intense, that you can make those, you can't promise that you will make them go away. None of us are quite that magic.
Yep.
But to put out the assertion that it can become manageable, that it is something that you can get off the table, that it's a problem that you can make manageable and no longer a life-changing affliction. That's hard to get credibility on, because most of the folks that I've known who have ADD, ADHD, this is not the first time they thought about working on it. They've been trying it on a do-it-yourself basis their whole lives. And perhaps it's part of the condition that self-coaching doesn't always work real well, because they may abandon it, they may not stick to it, they may not keep the discipline of doing it. So the real value of a coach is that it's someone else to whom to be accountable. It's someone else who can remind you. It's someone else who can see those things that, as someone who's just trying to deal with it themselves, you can't see.
Yep. So
so the coach holds up a mirror, and you know, that mirrors aren't easy to sell sometimes.
Absolutely.
People
absolutely
have a negative self-image.
Absolutely. So, again, so far we've covered relationships and transactional, replacement versus create a need, tangible and intangible. Let's talk about the difference between retail and wholesale. Retail being sell to the end consumer, and wholesale, selling to some type of a middle person. Different sales. Would you agree?
Yes, very different. Very different indeed.
What's some of the characteristics of
retail? Retail, it's more of the one-stop shop, one-stop sale. You know, if someone is buying from me in a retail environment, at the end of the conversation, it's really very clear whether this is going to move forward or not. You know, it's a do-or-die moment. So in some ways, retail is a lot more high pressure. Wholesale is more of a relationship sale, in that you're selling the business service of being part of their supply chain. You're saying, I can provide you with this many widgets at this quality at this price, and I know for a fact that's a lot better deal than you're going to get from widget maker B. It's a business-to-business, logical, rational sale, where at the retail end, it's a lot more high pressure, I think.
The other thing, too, about the wholesale that I'm throwing there, there's diluted feedback, because if your product is moving or not, sometimes it's diluted by the middle person, and it can be, you could have a great product, there might be some politics from a competitor in there, or it's just not represented, so it's just, you're not exactly sure of the market, because you're not dealing with it directly on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. I was talking yesterday with a salesperson who was saying the same thing about the home healthcare industry. He's been selling in that industry for years and years. This is like nursing homes, in-home healthcare services for the elderly and so on. He said the hardest thing about that sale is that he's almost never talking to the end user. He's talking to the provider, to the hospital that at best will put him on a list. He's talking with the relatives of Aunt May, who's going to need some special care. But he's not talking to the person who actually receives the care. And that indirectness is exactly what you're talking about in a wholesale sale environment.
In a weird sense, it's harder to listen to the customer because you're not talking directly to the customer.
Exactly. Exactly.
Steve, I need to run to... Go ahead.
One other dimension I hope that we can get into, and that's the one other distinction that I make between kinds of sales, and it has to do with the manipulative versus the high-integrity sale.
So let's get into that, because I need to run to a break real quick, but let's hit that when we get back. So everybody, again, to sign up for Steve's webcast or to learn more about him or to contact him, go to his website, addsalescoach.com, and with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
You can't go off to school with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention at attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back.
Welcome back, everybody. We're having a great conversation about the complexities and differences and different things that are needed in the different types of sales. We've covered a lot, but before the break, Steve, you brought up talking about manipulative sales and I think consultative sales. Tell us about them.
Well, it all gets down to, I believe, to me, it's one of the more important distinctions in different types of sales. And it's about whether what you're selling really is the best thing for the customer to do. That is, if the customer had full godlike knowledge of everything, of the competition, of the pricing options, of everything that was out in the marketplace that might help them, if they knew everything, would they select yours? It also gets to whether or not you really believe in what you're selling. If you believe that it really is in the best interest of the customer to do this, then you can be more genuine in selling it, and you're being consultative in terms of discovering their needs. And it's a matter of attitude and approach, too. When you're doing the consultative selling, you're having an interesting conversation with a person who might or might not need what you've got. And if they don't need it, you're not going to try to sell it to them. On the other hand, the more manipulative sale model, which you sometimes find in the more transactional sales and the one-stop shop sales, is that it's almost the opposite ethical mindset.
Uh-huh.
It's that a prospect is somebody who's got my commission in their pocket, and it's up to me to get it out, do whatever I must do. And when I find with my sales coaching clients that they're in that frame of regarding the customer as a mark, regarding the customer as someone that they need to trick or coerce or cajole or guilt or however else they might do it into buying their product and waiting until the 3-day wait period is over before canceling the order, when they look at sales from that framework, from that ethical perspective, I don't usually work with them because I can't get behind that sort of ethics. I work to help them turn that around and perhaps even find a different thing to sell that they really can believe in, something where it really is in their potential customer's best interest to go ahead and do this and be helped.
I got a great question for you on this because I love what you're saying. And there's a lot that I've coached, and I would classify, I consider myself principled. And I have a hard time selling something to somebody where I thought that somebody else really had a much better product. But at the same time, the reality of the world is, again, not just yours, I mean, going back to my insurance days, is there was a couple situations where I had a product that it was the best product, and I was just going out there and doing the stuff. But the thing about the insurance world is you can't sell a product until it's been filed with the state insurance departments and approved. And so if you come to market with something that was cool and different or unique or whatever, there's a barrier of entry because you're at market, and everybody else, if they got on their horse right now, it's about a year before they could even get there because they've got to go through that stuff. And it cycles through because everybody's trying to come up with something better. And so in the field that I was at, I kind of noticed is that, you know, it would ebb and flow between sometimes, you know, you really have a product that was you believed in, you thought it was the best out there, and, you know, you had a leg up. But other times people would leapfrog, and it was just this dance. I mean, you leapfrog, so you knew it was kind of coming around. So you would ebb and flow between these times where you had to go into what was a consultative sale and one that might have felt a little bit manipulative. And I have to tell you, personally, I struggled with those times when I didn't necessarily have it because it was hard. And I'm sharing that, Steve, because I think it's a reality of many, many industries. But it's also one of those things that if you're out there and you're taking a sales job, like, hey, this is kind of great, you know, it can lead to having to change jobs a lot, or there's an emotional thing to deal with. And I don't have the right answers, but I just kind of wanted to point that out because I do think that in some industries, the tech industry, probably another one since everything's changing so quickly, that you might be in a position to move in and out of those two. Thoughts?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Sometimes you come to a certain dark night when you realize that what you're selling might not be the very best thing for your client. And at that point, it becomes sort of an ethical decision. You know, do I go ahead and urge my client to buy something that isn't the best, or do I essentially go sell something else? So I've faced some of those nights myself. When I was selling human resource staffing placement, I found myself in a position where a very important part of my livelihood depended on convincing someone to take a job, and I knew that it wasn't really the best job that he could find.
Mm-hmm.
So the next morning I walked in and quit.
Mm.
That's when I got out of personnel sales.
Yep.
When it came down to the ethical issue of, do I, for my own benefit, take advantage of a person that I might be able to convince or persuade to act in what's not their very best interest.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, everything that I've been selling has always been in their best interest. If not,
yep,
I don't sell it.
Excellent. There's another thing that I want to kind of broach on that sales is the difference between, and I'm going to, this is insurance lingo, and Steve, maybe you can,
okay,
you can do change it, but I think you have brokers and you have agents, and so there are, a broker is somebody who can sell multiple products. So let's just, you walk into a broker's
right
office, they might be able to sell you Geico and Progressive and da 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 da. Or there's agents like Nationwide or Allstate. They can only
right
sell you Nationwide or Allstate products. And so as a broker, you might have a product line, like multiple things that you could sell, whereas an agent can only sell their thing. And to me, there's a big difference in that sales job between I can pick and choose, well, this one today I'll sell this one today that, or you're a one-trick pony. You want to share your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm very familiar with the difference. One of my best friends actually transitioned from being an agent to being a broker,
mm-hmm,
because he said that he wanted to be able to offer the very best deal across the whole field, whether it's business insurance, long-term disability, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So he made the transition for that reason. The benefit on being on the agency side, on the agent side, is that you've got that big, solid company behind you, and
mm-hmm
you have their marketing behind you, and
mm-hmm
you have all their resources behind you, and you can sell with some confidence that, you know, the other insurance might be $2 a month cheaper
mm-hmm
and provide essentially the same benefits, but there's the relationship benefit of you come to me for all your insurance needs, and whether it's for your business, for your car, for your health, what have you, I can do everything.
Mm-hmm.
So there is, on the agent side, there is always that slight, I hope slight, diminishment of value in exchange for the slight or maybe substantial increase in dependability long term.
I want to share this with you. Everybody, I'm not confronting him at all. This is not because it's just a different kind of perspective, but it's interesting because if you work for just one company, because I years ago I used to work for Aetna, okay, and because
okay
I only had one product, I knew the depth of that product much better, and I knew lots of nuances that weren't kind of at the surface. And when I would go in, I would be a lot of times, like I used to sell group insurance, and I'd walk into CFOs,
right,
and we had this cash flow product, and we got money to the CFO quicker. In other words, as soon as something happened, where other people delayed it, so the insurance company held on to that cash flow, that float, for a long period of time. And from a price wise, it was so buried into the product. It was, for the right guy, for the right CFO, it was a huge value. But on the brokerage side, if you had no Aetna's product and Prudential's product and Travelers product and Metropolitan's product back in those days, you didn't have the level of depth. It was more, you focused more on price, but as a Aetna guy, I focused more on value because there was the price, but I could actually, I was so much more educated because I didn't have to know everybody's product. I just had to know mine real, real well. And again, I'm not confronting you. I'm just, because there's this thing, but there's this level, is the advantage of being an agent is you know your products a heck of a lot better because you have less to know. Whereas on the broker side, you have more to choose from, but you have surface knowledge of those. And it's not, neither one, I'm not saying they're good, bad. I'm just saying they're completely different. And if you've got ADD out there and, you know, you really study some stuff, maybe an agent sale where you really know your product in depth and really well is better than having to know all of them at the same time. It's just kind of comparing and contrast the two.
Yeah, that's a really interesting take on it. I like that. The other piece would be that, you know, if the ADD drives you toward needing more variety and needing more stimulation in terms of exactly what are you learning about today,
yep,
then that might argue a little bit more toward the
yep.
broker side, too.
Yep.
But I think either way, insurance might be a very good match for folks with ADD if the job has certain kinds of conditions to it.
Yep, yep.
And if the salesperson or the would-be salesperson learns to manage the ADD correctly.
Yep.
Some of the most successful salespeople I've ever known have ADD, ADHD, and some of them are in jobs that are so structured and regimented that I sometimes am amazed that they can stand it.
Well, there's people say, I recorded a video with Wilma Feldman that's going to be released on Attention Talk Video, and the nature of it is how, you know, where do you, if you got ADHD, where do you go to try to find somebody who can help you? Well, here's where you go find the career counselors, and here's the places to go. But when you walk in, the cool part is you ask them, can you show me a list of the top ADD friendly jobs? And the notion is if they give you a list, run for the hills, because they don't necessarily know what they're doing. Is they're typecasting you, because those with ADHD I've coached tax attorneys before,
yes.
And you take a look at it, that's not supposed to be good. Just because you have ADD doesn't mean you're sales related either. And so the point really is it's diverse,
right.
And it's kind of across the board. So don't get kind of caught in that. One other comment that I want to make is we've been talking about agent broker from a perspective of insurance, but that concept is not limited to some of that stuff. You have there's a vacuum cleaner thing down the road for me that sells all kinds of different vacuums, and there's one across town that only sells a certain kind of vacuum. So that construct or distribution vehicle is not refined to the insurance agent, although the lingo is kind of associated with that. Steve, I got another thing that I want to make sure we kind of get this in before we kind of wrap this stuff up. And to me, there's some people out there like cold callers. You have a list, which are suspects. And
right.
What you do is you call them and you try to convert a suspect into a prospect.
Into
in other
words,
prospect. You call them up and say, da, 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 they go, yeah, I'm interested. Now you got somebody who's interested, they're no longer a suspect, they're a prospect. And then there's sales that you get the lead. So they said, yes, I want to hear more. So it's not cold, but your job is to take that prospect and then convert them to a customer. And to me, that there's a huge difference between converting a suspect to a prospect and then taking a prospect who's somebody who's already kind of interested and converting them into a customer. Thoughts on that?
Well, sure. It's all part of the sales process, you know, of going from first contact through qualifying, you know, making sure that the suspect, and the definition I've always used in it is a suspect who has a need, the money,
mm-hmm.
and the capacity to decide.
Mm-hmm.
A suspect who has all three becomes a prospect.
Mm-hmm.
Once you know that this is a qualified prospect who has need, money, and the ability to decide, at that point, the sales job is to make sure that they really do need what it is you offer, that you understand how they need it, why they need it, what it means to them. Again, it gets back to that listening thing. of and the asking excellent questions to really understand how the world looks from their eyes. Because as the old saying goes, until you've walked a mile in the other's shoes, you can't imagine the smell.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, the way you address that, you're exactly right in terms of the sale process. I was looking at kind of a job situation because there are people out there that their job is sales, but their job is to call people and just get the yes, I'll agree to have somebody else call me. Or in the financial world, you know, I get these letters every once in a while, you know, come down to our little luncheon or breakfast or dinner type
right.
thing, and we're going to talk to you about, you know, selling, you know, your kid Section 529 plans or prepaid or
right.
that type of stuff. So your job is not the complete sales cycle. Your job is to get them from one point to another. And in that context, again, the cold call to get the suspect, your job is just to get the okay to kind of do something, and your take rate on that might be relatively low, whereas the other one, as if you've got somebody who's interested, your take rate might be high. To me, that requires a different mental dynamic between the two, because in the cold call environment, you're going to hear no a lot more than you are probably in converting prospects to stuff like that. And that's, again, it's as different a process as different can be just because of the nature of that sale.
I absolutely agree, and I'd say that it's kind of similar to the first one we were talking about, which was the transactional and relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with transactional, it's one call and you close or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I'm doing invitations to the dinner about IRAs or whatever it is, you know, if my role in the sale is just to fill that restaurant with people who are at least somewhat interested in IRAs and are interested enough to accept the dinner in order to listen to someone else talk about it, you know, that's very much a transactional sale.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of that initial cold call, I know, are they coming or are they not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no repeat follow-up, there's no relationship
yep.
built.
Yep.
On the other hand, if I'm the financial advisor who is trying to interest them in an IRA, I'm going to be interested in learning more about their overall financial situation, gaining their trust enough that they're willing to talk to me about how much money they owe, how
yep,
much
yep.
savings they have, et cetera. So it's very different in the same way.
Yep.
You know, if it's transactional versus relationship, it's the consultative versus the one hit.
Yep. So to kind of pull this stuff together, we've deconstructed sales. I mean, we could probably go on for another hour or two, but when you start to say, I got a transactional, intangible, wholesale sale, all of a sudden you start to take a look at those things, and it starts to take this big breath of some stuff, and the characteristics that you need to go, all of a sudden it starts to whittle those things down, and you start to take a look at that environment, and you can go, ooh, there's this thing about that I'm not necessarily comfortable, which might not be conducive for you in that type of sales, but you might be good in another one over here based off the characteristics.
Right.
But that notion of, and you know, there's this other show that is either airing after this one or did before, Steve, that you're drawn to sales for those characteristics that we talked about, the freedom, the variety, the thrill, and all that kind of stuff. If you're just drawn to sales jobs because you think of that, you got to be careful because you're not necessarily paying attention to the right thing. You actually need to take a look at the nature of the particular sales position and break it down to say, can I fit in that particular environment? Because you might be drawn to sales for very good reason, but the job or the nature of the one you're looking at might be toxic for you. And
absolutely.
All too often I've seen those with ADD miscast themselves, and they I must be a sales guy and they get in that job and they keep landing into the wrong job, and after a while it catches up to them and it hits their self-esteem when actually they might be really good at that particular occupation. They're just looking at the wrong specific type of job in that area. And as I described many times, mostly it's about environment. It's not about sales. It's about the micro environment that you deal in, because if you focus on that first, you're more apt to cast yourself in the right position.
Absolutely agree, Jeff. And I'd even take it two steps further, if I could. I'll be as brief as I can.
Please.
One is, you look at the role models who are in there. And if you find that you're interested in insurance sales, or if you're interested in car sales or whatever, a really good idea is to find a mentor, find a role model who has been successful in it, get to know them, and ask yourself honestly, is this something I could do? Or are there some such differences between the way I tick and the way they tick that it's unlikely that I'd be able to ever do what they do? That's one thing. The other thing is that there are so many stereotyping movies out there about what sales is about that really distort what a career in sales is about, and I think do a disservice to the profession. You know, for instance, there was one with Vin Diesel called The Boiler Room. Wow. That's not at all like the world of sales that I know.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Glengarry Glen Ross. There's so much distortion in that movie. I mean, I love the movie. It's one of my favorites. But there's a lot that's distorted in there that gives people the wrong idea about sales. And if you find a genuine role model in the kind of sales profession that you're interested in, it's going to give you a much better take on it than listening to all the stereotypes, listening to especially the stereotypes from movies about sales, will ever give you.
Brilliant. Brilliantly said. We did a show, I think it was last summer. There was a woman who was a listener of ours who contacted me, who was 80 years, blah, 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 and she had this stereotype. I want to be a lawyer, so she went to law school. She got there, and oh, my God, how toxic it was. And it was interesting to me because I'd had some conversations with other people, because you think of that stereotype of a law person, but if you really think about what that job is, it's a data job. You just sit at your desk and you do research by yourself and you write all day. And when you think about that, it's not quite what that stereotype is in your mind of a lawyer, yet that's what the job is really, really about. And those stereotypes really can be misleading, which it's brilliant, Steve, because that brings us back to the topic of the show, and that is stereotyping sales to be a one-size-fits-all. If you have ADD, be careful. Don't stereotype sales. Take a look more specifically at the characteristics and the nature of the specific area that you're selling, of sales that you're looking at. We're not saying they're all good. We're not saying they're all bad. Just we hope today that we broke it down at a level so you can begin to look at some things in a way to piecemeal and say, does this make some sense for me? So, Steve, with that, is there any last comments or any last thoughts before we wrap this up?
Not really. I think it's been a great show. I appreciate you having me on.
It's been an absolute thrill to have you on. Everybody out there, again, a reminder, it's addsalescoach.com. It's Steve Colander, and go there, check it out, sign up for his webinar. And with that, Steve, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks a lot for having me, Jeff.
Take care, everybody. Catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio.